Modern Love, the podcast, is supported by...
This podcast is supported by Cartier. In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, Cartier shares testaments of love in all its forms from around the world. Please keep listening for today's love story later in this episode.
Produced by the iLab at WBUR, Boston.
From the New York Times and WBUR Boston, this is Modern Love. Stories of love, loss, and redemption. I'm your host, Meghna Chakrabarty. Honestly, I'm not sure what week of quarantine we're in right now. Obviously, it depends on how you're counting and where you are. But right now, a lot of us feel stuck in the middle of a huge amount of uncertainty. Will life go back to normal? And when? Well, we put out a call for your voice memos about how you're doing during the COVID-19 outbreak. And we actually got a voice memo from someone who captured one of those moments, when something that feels normal collides with something that is far from it. This is Michelle, who called us from Brooklyn, New York.
I decided I was going to keep online dating through this to keep some semblance of moving forward. So I downloaded a dating app and set up a first date. And instead of picking the first place we would meet, I picked which backdrop I wanted. I did a sniff check before the date and started putting deodorant on one armpit before realizing there was no point. And then we started the video call. And partway through, my roommate came home. She had been working as a doctor running a COVID ICU floor at her hospital on the Upper East Side. And she called my name, so I excused myself from the date. And I stood at one end of the hall where she stood at the other end by the front door wearing her mask and her scrubs. And she just started sobbing. And I stood there unable to go hug her because we had to keep apart. And she cried about her day and what she had seen and what she thought was yet to come, and I tried to comfort her as best I could from a distance. And I started the shower for her, and she got in, and then I went to continue on with my date to pretend like the world will keep moving forward in the same way that it always has.
And here's Astrid. She's been with her husband Kevin for almost 20 years. He's a 50-year-old oral surgeon who practices in Los Angeles.
In the evening of March 22nd, my husband walks into the kitchen and calmly tells me that he's feeling a bit achy and has a low-grade temp. Things went downhill pretty quickly. The fever, the chills, the intense myalgias, the headache, basically the flu on steroids. I was alone. Kevin was quarantined in our bedroom, and he had given me strict sterile technique guidelines, which basically meant don't come in here at all unless you are bringing me water or food. Kevin also instructed me to wear gloves and a surgical mask around the kids. On day 5, we got Kevin's positive test result back. No big surprise there. Luckily, the virus never affected his breathing, so relatively speaking, he got off easy. But I still had never seen my ultra-fit, healthy husband this sick. We're on day 10 today. I'm feeling well, and Kevin is still recuperating, but he's smiling.
And here's Kevin.
As a surgeon who's endured the rigors of a surgical residency, I figured I could withstand just about anything. COVID-19 certainly has put me to the test and knocked me on my ass. These have been some of the most difficult times of my life. But the outpouring of love and the support from my family and the friends has been unbelievable.
Even if you aren't facing COVID-19 itself, many of you are dealing with related challenges. One listener, Julie, learned that her second round of IVF would be canceled because of coronavirus.
We had a successful transfer then in January, and at 7 weeks, I suffered a miscarriage. So we've been getting back on our feet. We've been anxiously awaiting another chance to do IVF, and we were 4 days away from being ready to go when we got a call from the nurse that my IVF cycle would be canceled indefinitely. So anyone that's out there that's listening to this that is in that position, I just want you to know that you're not alone and I'm thinking of you.
My name is Taylor, and before COVID, I went through a couple of changes. One was a breakup, and the other was getting sober. I've been sober for over 4 months now, but over half of that time was with my former partner, so doing it alone and through isolation feels really different. I know that if I was still drinking during this period, I would probably have used it to nurture my relationship with alcohol. I probably would have loved having an excuse to drink alone every night. But I do find it interesting how, even though there's lessened pressure to drink in the sense that bars are closed and gatherings are limited, there's still a lot of virtual pressure. And I found that I've had to kind of virtually distance myself in addition to the physical distancing, which can feel even more lonely. So my heart really goes out to people who are struggling with addiction right now.
Hi, Modern Love. My name is Angela. It's amazing to think back this time last year when my long-distance boyfriend Eric and I were breaking up. I remember being very angry and devastated during that time. Today I'm on my on day 7 of quarantine after being exposed to a person who tested positive. And Eric is one of the very few who know, and he checks on me every day, reminds me to stay positive. Constantly making me laugh. If anything, COVID-19 has shown me that love evolves and that love is more than just romance. It's friendship, it's care, and it's who's there for us when especially when we're scared.
We'll be back with more of your stories after the break.
I'm Julie Turkowitz. I'm a reporter at the New York Times. To understand changes in migration, I traveled to the Darien Gap. Thousands have been risking their lives to pass through the border of Colombia and Panama in the hopes of making it to the United States. We interviewed hundreds of people to try and grasp what's making them go to these lengths. New York Times journalists spend time in these places to help you understand what's really happening there. You can support this kind of journalism by subscribing to the New York Times.
We're back with more of your stories about how the COVID-19 pandemic is impacting you and your relationships. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
My name is Megan LeMay. I'm in Richmond, Virginia. I was talking to my 5-year-old who asked if he could go to the hospital and wear his Elsa costume to cheer people up. And I told him that he couldn't go. It's not safe because of the virus. And he asked me, well, why do you go every day? Because I'm a doctor. And so I'm at the hospital facing coronavirus every day. And the whole situation has really put into focus the deep love I have for my family and the balance between that and the love I have for my job, because it's more than a duty and an oath. I really I love my job and I love my patients, and when I talk to them during this time and they're sending me personal protective equipment and telling me that they're worrying about me, it makes me think that they love me too.
Here's Margot. She's 23 and has been living in Ghana for the past 3 months. When the threat from coronavirus started escalating, she tried to come back to the United States, but she wasn't able to get out of the country when flights were canceled and the borders closed. Margot says the whole experience has brought her closer to her mother.
She's in her late 60s and barely knows how to flip the camera on her iPhone. But now that we've accepted that I'm basically stuck here until the border opens again, we have just kind of gone up this new path of our relationship. I think we were always close, but sorry, I'm going to cry. But now it's just like we're realizing how much like just our presence alone is so important. So I just have gotten her to play like Words with Friends, and she'll hold her FaceTime open just like while she's working, and we'll just like sit there in silence because I'm 4 hours ahead. So just like having the phone open just like keeps the scene.
Many of you are trying to find ways of figuring out what quarantine looks like when you're away from home.
My name is Natalie, and my boyfriend Orfeo and I are currently living in a vacant boarding school in the center of Rome. 6 months ago, Orfeo moved to Rome, joining me here after 2 years of dating long distance. For the past 26 days, we've spent every moment together, and we've barely fought. To save money, our school has turned off heating and lights during the day, so the corridors are cold and dark, even though it's early April. Every morning we run laps in the school driveway, and every evening Orfeo reads me pages from the books he's studying for his PhD in art history. We fall asleep puzzling over the identities of anonymous Renaissance artists, and then we wake up and do it all over again.
Here's Charlotte. She lives in New Hampshire with her family, and she's been trying to make this time fun for both her and her kids.
I've developed a series of personas who help me out in the morning when I have to drag the children out of bed. So I have Russian babushka lady, and she sounds like this, and she tells the children she will only serve them borscht for breakfast. I have Sylvia, and she's just a lady from Brooklyn, and she's very, very cynical about the State of the Union and about what we can offer our citizens in terms of support. We have Scottish Nan. She takes them on long hikes through the woods to make sure their little hearts are pumping. It makes me laugh. It makes the children laugh. There is something about someone else delivering the harsh news that, yes, you still have to brush your teeth even though you're in quarantine. And somehow it's allowing me to survive this fraught, exhausting, terrifying moment.
And here's Glenn Weaver, a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force. Right now, he's worried about a lot of people, including his fiance, his daughter, and the 21 people who work for him.
I came on active duty before 9/11 and have been deployed to war for several years. But war is different than coronavirus in that I'm older and wiser now and just realize how fragile love and life can be. But I also know that love is resilient. I have hope for the future and that after this is all over with, we will all be together and then I'll be stronger and be able to love better after it all.
Thank you to everyone who contributed to this episode. You can find a full list of contributors at wbur.org/modernlove. And we want to leave you with just one more thing. A postcard of how a lot of you are spending your time right now, because all of us are figuring out what our days look like, from how to deal with big life events to the mundane ones.
We're pretty much all just sitting at home binge-watching Love is Blind, right?
We play cornhole because we bought cornhole on Amazon.
We bought a 1,000-piece puzzle. We finished it in 5 days. Well, we almost finished it. Of the puzzle's 1,000 pieces, we only had 999.
I cook delicious food, and I work out, naked.
I'm 46 and single, and the only body I can touch is my orange tabby cat who curls up at my waist in bed.
It's just nice to spend a little bit more time with the person that I love while I still can.
And the next thing I know, he's down on one knee with a beautiful ring, asking me to marry him.
I was able to officiate my niece's wedding over Zoom.
We did our vows, and we had takeout that was delivered to us into in our car, and that was our wedding.
Modern Love is a production of the New York Times and WBUR, Boston's NPR station. It's produced, directed, and edited by Caitlin O'Keefe. Original scoring and sound design by Matt Reed. Iris Adler is our executive producer. We're edited by Catherine Brewer. Daniel Jones is the editor of Modern Love for the New York Times and advisor to the show. The idea for the Modern Love podcast was conceived by Lisa Tobin. Additional thanks to Mia Lee, Julia Simon, and Anya Stremian at the New York Times, and to Paul Kahlo at WBUR. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Hang tough, everyone. We'll see you next week.